David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Advisor with Stacey Chalemi. And today I'm very excited because we have a very special guest on our show today. Her name is Kristen Schott, and she is an author, and she is very well-educated in the area of mental health and talking about different topics related to that. And today she's going to talk about different mental health issues and talk about eating disorders and some other things that I think you'll be very interested about. So, Kristen, it's been a pleasure to have you on our show. I'm really excited to talk to you. Tell everybody a little about yourself and what you do.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to be here. So I'm 27. I recently moved from Dallas, Texas to Nashville, Tennessee. So getting that all settled out, you know, living life in my mid to late 20s. But I am a huge proponent of mental health. I had an eating disorder in college. I've been through, you know, depression, anxiety, OCD, a lot of different things in my 20s. So big advocate for that. In my full-time job, I do marketing. I do a lot of like content and content strategy, but on the side, I love to write. I have my own podcast, so I love to do that. I love to just be active, you know, hang out with friends and family, read.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Now, when it comes to mental health, when you had an eating disorder, was this something that you battled with your whole life? Or was it some things in your life that caused you to develop an eating disorder?
No, so I did not have it my whole life. I developed it my second semester of freshman year of college. So my whole life, I have been pretty thin. That's just how I was built. I'm tall and lean. I'm never really worried about it. And then in college, I was a college athlete. I played volleyball and you build a lot of muscle. And, you know, because it's a different game, you have to kind of step up your game from high schooler to college level. And so I gained weight my freshman year. Most of it was muscle, but in my brain, I just saw the number on the scale go up. And that was also a time where I was on social media a lot. And I saw just a lot of like, you know, you should be below 100 pounds, or people who are competing in like fitness competitions, having like six pack abs and stuff that isn't sustainable for a woman. Yes. But in my brain, I didn't realize that. I just saw that. And I was like, oh, that's what I need to look like. Mm-hmm. And I think also it didn't help that going to college for the first time, you know, going away, it's a huge change, a huge adjustment from, you know, living at home with your parents. Now you're on your own. Now you're adjusting to all these classes and kind of having some freedom. So I think I probably felt a little bit out of control there and tried to grasp for some control, which unfortunately came in the form of controlling food, exercise in my body. But yeah, it wasn't really until my freshman year of college as a college athlete. And then even once I began struggling with it, I didn't realize I had it. I was like, oh, I'm just being healthy. Like everyone counts the calories. Everyone exercises on top of being a college volleyball player. And so it wasn't until a few years later that I was like, oh, that actually wasn't healthy. That was not, you know, okay.
Right. Now, was it hard for you to like, were you in denial about your eating disorder? Or was this something that, you know, you knew you had, but you kind of like, you know, it was like a struggle and a battle for you?
Yeah, I definitely was in denial. So after my second semester, my freshman year of college, we went into the off season. And I remember I was trying to lose weight. So I don't know if you're familiar, but there's anorexia, which is pretty much where you restrict a lot and you try and, you know, get your weight down. So I did that for about 6 months. And when I came home for the summer, my mom was like, you've lost too much weight. You're too skinny, like all of this stuff. And I was like, you're right. Like I'm done, you know, doing that. I'm all good there. But it quickly turned into orthorexia, which is a little bit newer of an eating disorder. Yeah. And it's hard because it's like a fine line between healthy and being obsessed with it. So you're obsessed with clean eating. So pretty much like I couldn't eat any carbs. I couldn't eat anything that wasn't like chicken and vegetables. And so still as an athlete, I was not getting enough food, even though I wasn't like actively cutting out, you know, restricting myself. I was obsessed with like how I looked, obsessed with exercise, obsessed with clean eating. Yeah. I put very heavy quotes around the clean eating part, but you know, yeah, foods were good and bad, all of that stuff. And so at first I was like, no, you're right. I'm done losing weight. I have accepted that. I just didn't realize that I had gone into another, eating disorder and continue to lose another like 10 to 12 pounds from there. But even then, I was like, I'm a college athlete. I'm healthy. Like, this is again, what you're supposed to do. And so I think
Right.
for a while I was in denial that this is okay. This is what I was supposed to be doing. This is what quote unquote healthy was.
Yeah.
And then it was kind of a quick turnaround. So my senior year of college, I actually broke my rib playing volleyball.
Oh, wow.
And it was like the beginning of the season, I was doing really good that season. So I was pretty upset. I was out for like 6 to 7 weeks. And it was during that time that my eyes were kind of open. Whenever I couldn't exercise anymore, I couldn't, be this athlete anymore. My eyes were kind of opened and I was like, oh, like I, it kind of like flipped the switch. All of a sudden I was no longer in denial. I saw that I had this issue.
Yeah.
Even once I realized that, it still took me like months and years to really like heal and still not struggle. And even to this day, like it's something, I think a lot of us struggle still with food thoughts or body image and stuff, but I'm in a healthier place where I no longer act on those thoughts if they do come up.
That's great. Now, how are you able to not act on your thoughts? Because that's a very difficult thing for people. Like people get thoughts, it really affects them emotionally, and they immediately act on their thoughts because their emotions take over their mind, their body. And so for you, how are you able to not let your emotions take over?
Yeah, I think definitely it's something that takes time. At the very beginning, it's not, easy, especially when, again, like maybe you're gaining weight as you're, recovering and all of this stuff, and your body's looking different and your exercise has to look different. So I think one thing that helps is, like in this case, was really thinking of my goals of like, okay, like what I was doing wasn't healthy. My goal is to actually be healthy too. Like, for example, I lost my period because my body fat was so low. And like, as a woman, even if you don't want kids, like your period is something that's so important to you, but especially if you want kids, you need that. And so
Right.
in my mind, it helped to have that goal of like, okay, I'm not listening to this thought that tells me not to eat, or this thought that tells me to go run a couple extra miles because I ate X, Y, and Z. Because I had that goal in mind. Doesn't make it easy. Like at the beginning, there were definitely times where I gave in or, listened to the thought. But I think keeping a goal in mind, and then as time, like even if you can follow it to the T, even if it's like, okay, I'm going to push off exercising for 5 more minutes, like little steps, because you're training your brain and you're showing yourself like, okay, if I can show up this way, then eventually it gets a little bit easier to show up in the big ways.
Right.
And then I think nowadays when I still do get some of those thoughts, again, I just think back to that girl and just how unhappy she was, how unhealthy she was. I was tired all the time. I was cold. Like, I didn't feel very healthy. And so nowadays I do think of that, but okay, like my life now, even if I do struggle with body image, or I do struggle with this food thought, I just think to how much better my life is now. And that helps me keep going as well.
I love it. Now, did you do journaling to help you with all your emotions and everything that you were going through?
Yeah, I've always like off and on journal. Like sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. But I think it definitely does help to, especially something that I went through with my last therapist that wasn't necessarily centered around like eating disorders, but it was a lot of self-compassion work. And, this kind of these three steps of self-compassion of the first is mindfulness of just like being aware of I'm feeling frustrated, I'm feeling defeated, I'm feeling X, Y, and Z. Then the next piece is the common humanity of realizing, okay, someone else has felt this too. Like I'm not the only, because a lot of times in your struggling, you think I'm the only one feeling this. I'm the only one going through this.
Yeah.
So remind yourself that whether someone's struggling with that exact same thing or not, someone out there is struggling as well. And then you go into the kindness piece where you speak to yourself with kindness. And that's really helped me with my body image. Like, so I will journal a lot of times if I am having a lot of negative thoughts around like food and my body, I will journal out those three parts of like, this is what I'm feeling, acknowledge it. I'm not the only one. And like, how can I speak kindly to myself? So that's really helped in the journaling aspect.
I love that.
Down.
So how are you able to change those thoughts? Because sometimes when we are clustered with negative thoughts, it's very hard sometimes to switch the key and focus on the positive versus the negative. Because sometimes, for whatever reason, we focus more on negative than we do positive. So how are you able to gain the strength and the mentality to focus on your positivity and be able to change your behaviors through the positivity?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think a big piece of it was acceptance, which may sound weird, but a lot of times we just want to push and resist. And like something my therapist told me is like, what we resist persists. And so a lot of times, like, even though we're trying to get rid of that negative thought or whatever it might be, like the more we're focusing on, don't think this, get rid of this, we're actually focusing more on it.
Yeah.
And so finding a balance, like acceptance doesn't mean that you're not going to have those thoughts. That's not going to be hard, but it's at least accepting like, okay, in this moment, this is a thought that I'm having. Like, this is a feeling that I'm having, whatever the case may be. And surprisingly, learning to accept it helps it come up less often because, again, you're not focusing on it. You're able to kind of it's almost like distance yourself and then visualizing like, I am not my thought. So I have this thought, but like, I am a person apart from all my thoughts and my feelings. Not that they don't matter or they're not valid, they absolutely are. But realizing that like you are a core human being apart from those can really help to be like, okay, I'm having this thought, but I'm not this thought. Like, I'm going through depression, but I am not depression myself or whatever the case may be. So I definitely think acceptance, picturing, whether it's actual visualizing or just like trying to separate being like, I am a person outside of these thoughts, that really helps. And then when you do think a negative thought, what has helped is just like countering it, being like, okay, especially because my anxiety, it will think a negative thought and just spiral down the negatives. So try to counter it with like, well, what if this positive thought is true? So I'm, you know, I have this negative thought that's telling me to restrict or to not eat XYZ. What can the other thought is like, but eating XYZ could fuel my body for this workout or could taste really good. Like, I actually want some ice cream, so I'm going to eat some ice cream. Right. So trying to think of like the opposite and hold both of them. Okay, there's this negative thought, but that's not all there is. There's also another story, another side that you're probably just not seeing.
Right. I think it's so important to write, you know, anytime something negative comes into our mind is to pull out the positive out of the negative. And so a lot of times that would be helpful for me. So if something negative happened or I had a negative thought, I would try to stop myself, take a deep breath, and then try to focus on, okay, what's positive about this thought? You know, what's positive about this action? And that would help me see and rechange the whole train of thought and then be able to, like, you know, focus more on a positive journey or path.
Yeah, that's a great point too. And I love how you said like kind of mentally stop yourself too, because a lot of times we don't even notice. Like, I've done a lot of work in therapy, but like there are times where we don't even notice how negative we're thinking or our thoughts that are coming through because they're so automatic. Yeah. So I think even becoming aware of them is a huge win. Like, I know it may not feel like a win, the win to you may be like, I want to get rid of all of these, but even just like acknowledging and being aware of like, oh, that was a negative thought I had. And then doing something as well. Like, this is more for like rumination and OCD, but I think it can work for anyone. Mm-hmm. I read it in a book. I forgot what book now, but it was like, say stop out loud and like put your hand out and then move someplace else. And even that can help shift your mindset. If like you are thinking a negative thought, you'd be like, stop, like recognize it and then think of a positive, or even just like moving, like, I'm in the kitchen, let me walk to the dining room or something, just to like break up that thought process.
I love that. I love that. And I like the idea that you just use stop, you know, you're right then and there, you're physically telling, you know, mentally telling your brain to just stop it. So you break that cycle, because, you know, people tend to sometimes over and over and over again, they, you know, because I forgot, there's a crazy number of thoughts that we get daily. And, you know, and as you know, when you think about it, you can easily just, you know, if something's really upsetting you or bothering you, or you have this negative thought, you can just keep going and going and going, and then and it escalates and it makes things worse. And, you know, it's being able to say stop, you know, and be able to stop that thought and then refocus yourself to something more positive.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that. Now, what motivated you to write your book? So tell us a little about your book.
Yeah. So my book is called More Than Conquerors. It's a devotional for girls and women who have struggled or are struggling with an eating disorder. And I published it just over 4 years ago at the end of 2020. And it really at the time was a God thing. So I've always wanted to be an author. Since I was like 8 years old, I've been writing short stories and books and chapters and all of that. Like, it's the one thing that was on my bucket list, was to publish a book. I just thought I would be like in my 40s, not, you know, 23 and writing about eating disorders. Mm-hmm. But I went to this like conference that was for like Christian like entrepreneurs, people who wanted to like be an entrepreneur. I was like, well, I'll always go to that. And they had a segment or a little like outbreak session on self-publishing. I was like, well, I want to be an author, might as well go learn about self-publishing. So I went there and okay, everyone's going to go around the room and you're going to say like a book idea that you're writing, that you want to write, like that you have outlined. And I was like, shoot, I got nothing. Like, I was just here to listen, you know? And so the mic is passing around. I'm like fourth or fifth in line and people are sharing these awesome stories. And so someone hands me the mic. And at this point too, I had barely even opened up to my family that I had struggled with an eating disorder, much less like told the world or strangers.
Yeah.
But I get the mic And out of my mouth comes, I'm writing a devotional for girls and women who are struggling with an eating disorder because I struggled with one in college. And I was like, where did that come from?
Wow.
It was just like, I think it was something that probably was deep inside of me. And I just like pushed down. I was like, no, I can't tell the world. I can't write that.
Yeah.
So that's where the idea came from. And once I said it out loud, I mean, that was in 2017 or 2018. I can't remember. So it took 2 or 3 years still to get the process out and to write and all of that. But
Yeah.
I think a big piece that I wanted to was at the time, I really didn't see a lot of faith resources that were faith-based about eating disorders. The church wasn't talking about it.
Yeah.
And I think that's super important because just like depression, anxiety, like eating disorders and mental illness that needs to be talked about within the church space. And so I think that was a big motivator. And then I think I didn't necessarily mean for it to be this way, but it was very healing for me to go through that. And, you know, obviously not to be perfect and have all the answers. Like if you read the book, you're not going to be like, great, I'm healed. But it
Right.
really helped me to the way I set up is there's a couple different, there's like, you know, 15 different verses, and each verse has like a little, has the verse, has like a brief description about what the verse means or how we can apply it or my story, how it fits in. And then there's an application section where you really can like put that to use, you know, and get something applicable, something tangible out of it, which I really wanted like people to be able to walk away and have like practical steps that they could do to at least help them cope or help them along their healing journey.
I think that's so important. And it, you know, a lot of times in Christianity, we believe in the power of prayer, but the power, you know, you can only, you know, there's more to it than just prayer. It's taking action, you know, and some people, you know, in the Christian faith, they believe just in the power of prayer and just praying about it. But it goes further than that. It's actually, you know, taking the necessary steps in order to heal yourself and to get through the mental health issues, whether it be an eating disorder or depression or anxiety. But you know, there's actions that need to be taken. And you know, I think it's so important that we, you know, each person, you know, that even the church realizes that everybody has their own way of creating their own faith that's right for them, and it shouldn't be judged. That there is no right or wrong way, in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly. And like you said, of not to discount the power of prayer, like prayer is powerful if it works for you. If it does, like then great. But there is a tendency to be like, oh, I'm just gonna like pray and God's just gonna snap his fingers and heal me, which like did that happen in the Bible? Yes. Like is that possible? Sure. But 99% of the time, like God's gonna provide the people, a therapist, the professionals, he's gonna provide the tools, the books, the resources to help you like walk through it and like you said, take action. Like you have to work on it for sure.
Right, exactly. And that's an important factor that I think people have to realize too, is that you know God does give you the people the ability to help others. And you know, it's not always just through the power of prayer. You know, that you know, there's a lot more that needs to be taken in account for, you know, because a lot of times people will just believe in the power of prayer, and then what happens is that things get worse. And you know, so if you realize that things in your life aren't right, you know, don't wait. Take action.
Yeah, that's a huge lesson that I had to learn because there would be times I'd be like, just praying for something. I'm like, oh, it's getting worse, or like it's not going to happen. But it's like you have so much like not responsibility in like a negative way, but like accountability, responsibility. Like you have the ability to help
Right.
yourself and to change your life as well, along with obviously other resources as needed.
Right, exactly. Now you also talk about, you know, trusting yourself, you know, and that's huge because a lot of people don't always trust themselves. They don't go with their gut feeling, or they have intuition but they don't follow it, or they don't recognize it. You know, what is for you, what is trusting yourself? What does that mean to you?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And I mean, I'm 27 years old, and I probably, it's only in the last few like months that I've really started to dig into this. And I think it's come a lot from my faith deconstruction that I've been on. But to me, like trusting myself is realizing that I have like this core being that like knows the answer, that knows what's right for me, that knows what's best for me. And it's learning to tap into that because a lot of times it's really hard to when there's a lot of noise, whether it's in your own brain. I intellectualize a lot. So I like to think through things instead of like sitting and listening to what my gut's telling me, whether it's other people, you know, church, your family, society telling you how you should be, how you should act. And that can interfere with like your gut. And so, yeah, it's knowing that I have this core innate being that truly knows what's best for me, that knows what's right, if I just take the time to actually listen to it.
And how do you personally take the time to listen to it and connect with it?
Yeah. So something that's been huge for me is just pausing. In today's fast-paced world, it's go, go, go. Takes food on the go, this on the go, multitask, yeah. Watch TV, call a friend at the same time that you're working, like all the things.
Yeah.
And so it's really helped me just throughout the day to try and take pauses. And I will like, nothing is too small to listen to your gut. It's not like you just trust your gut on big decisions, you know?
Yeah.
Like, a huge one that I had to make was this move to Nashville because I had no friends, no family in the area. I just had this gut feeling. And so that was, so a couple of things. Like, one is when you have the feeling, act on it. Like, you won't always know. There's still times where I'm like, I don't know what my gut's trying to tell me. But when you know, like, act on it, because that signals to yourself that, okay, I will listen the next time that I have a gut feeling.
Yeah.
And then second, I do it for little things. I do it for, what do I feel like eating? I do it for after work. I'll like try and take a pause and be like, do I want to go do yoga? Do I want to call a friend? Like, just taking those little pauses throughout the day to be like, what do I want to do right now? What is it trying to tell me? Even if you can't always listen to it, because granted, it could say, I want to go take a nap. And you're like, well, I have work to do. I can't. But even just like learning to listen and acknowledge. And so I started taking pauses like right when I wake up, right after work, just throughout the day. Taking pauses when you actually, when you feel something come up, act on it, whether it's this sounds good to eat, or I want to go do this activity, or I was supposed to go, you know, work out, but I really want to go call a friend instead. So I'm going to do that.
Right.
And then, and then just nothing is too small to listen to yourself on.
Right. I love that. That's so true. You know, and I think it's so important that people really, you know, trust themselves, because a lot of people are insecure in when it comes to certain things and they don't trust themselves. And, you know, your inner self is always talking to you. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to yourself, yourself will guide you in the right direction.
Exactly. Yeah. And I do think it is, you know, a big problem, whether people know it or talk about it or not, but is trusting yourself. And like I said, so many things can get in the way, because we have so many things that are, you know, vying for our attention and telling us what we should do, how we should look, what we should wear, what we should do as a work, like for a job, what we shouldn't do, what's good and bad. And like you kind of mentioned before with prayers, like with faith, you know, everyone has to figure out a faith that works for them. It's the same thing for your life. Like, your life is not meant to look like your friends or your neighbors or your partners or your families. Like, everyone is so unique. And that's a cool thing. Yeah. Like, I think when you start to learn to trust yourself, it brings up a lot of really cool, unique opportunities, because you're not just going with the flow. You're not just going doing something because you think you should or someone told you to. And so I think it's something that we all really should and can work on. It's just learning to trust yourself, because like you said, there is that inner self that, like, only you know what's best for you. And
right.
If you don't, like, that's like, if you don't listen to that, then you're not going to live as authentically. You're probably not live as happy of a life as you could, because you're constantly repressing your true self.
Right. 100%. And I think that's one of the biggest problems today that I see a lot, is that people, you know, they're brought up a certain way, or they have their own morals or values or a way of living. And they immediately think that everybody else needs to live the way they live. That's the right way. Where, like you mentioned, which is a really important point, is that everybody has a different personality, a different life, different wants, different needs. And we all have to do what's right for us, and that we shouldn't be judgmental and judge, you know, others and say, oh, no, you should be doing it this way. This is the right way, because maybe we grew up in a society, or we grew up in a family environment where everybody was doing it that way. So immediately, you know, they think everybody should be doing it that way, when it's not true. It's really what works for you and what's best for you as an individual. Because the main thing is that you want to be able to function and be happy. And, you know, and those are your two goals, is to be, you know, have a strong mentality and to be able to function and live the life that you want to live.
Yeah, exactly. And it is, that was something that I struggled with for so long, because I'm very much a black and white thinker. So everything is right versus wrong, good versus bad. And I think, like, that's one of the things I'm deconstructing a little bit in my faith, is I grew up being told that you can't trust yourself, that, like, you're this, you know, filthy, dirty sinner, you know, all these things, that, like, you can only trust God. And so I think that was a big piece of, like, oh, okay, like, I'm horrible. Like, every decision, every thought I have must be wrong. Yeah. And then also a lot of times it is, and, you know, saying that, like you said, like, there's one right way to do it. And so in my brain, I'm like, yeah, know there's a right way. I have to. And so that causes anxiety of like, should I listen to myself? Because what if that's the wrong way? What if it's bad? But it really is like you think about no one is living your life. Like even, you know, people, siblings who grow up in the same household are going to have different personalities, different desires. And I think a lot of people are miserable because, and they may not admit it, but they are miserable because they are trying to live someone else's life. And it's like, you think at the end of the day, when you get to your deathbed, like no one else in your life is going to be like, oh man, I wish like you should have done this. It's like going to be you. Like, I wish I would have done this. I wish like no one else has a say. And that's not to say that you can't get advice or people like there aren't, you know, good things to follow, but it's like finding what you want, what you desire and what's best for you.
Yeah. And I'm a big, big advocate for listening to your gut, going with your heart, you know, really listen to your intuition and just being able to just, you know, just relax and go deep into yourself and your, you know, change your mindset and really focus on who you are. Because a lot of times if you, I don't know if you ever experienced this by talking to others, if you ask people, well, if you take this title away from you, or if you take this title away from you, you know, then who are you, you know? And then a lot of people won't know. So if you take, you know, a worker or a girlfriend or a boyfriend, or you take, you know, a husband or a wife, and you take all these titles away from yourself, and it's like, now, who are you as a person? A lot of people won't be able to answer that question because they don't know who they are as a person because they've been given all these titles by society. Mm-hmm. And they are kind of like, I'm not sure. I do like this. And they're trying to figure it out as you talk to them, where, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's a practice that we need to really practice every day is understanding ourselves and who we are and what our needs are.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Two things. One, when you said like you take away all the titles, that's so true, because we do find our identity wrapped up in so much in being a partner, in being a mom or a dad, or this is my job title, CEO, marketer. And that's something that I've really been struggling with myself as I've deconstructed my faith. And like, I still believe, but I'm not quite like fully believe. So I'm like, am I a Christian? Am I like not knowing and really wanting this title and this label to know who I am? And it's like, no, like, none of those things are bad. Being a wife, a mom, a dad, a partner, a, you know, XYZ, like none of those are bad things.
Yeah.
But when your identity gets wrapped up in them, that's when you start to lose yourself, because you think, oh, like, well, what would a wife do? And it's like, no, what would you do, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I love that. And I love how you mentioned it's a practice. Cause again, like, I wish I could be sitting here and being like, I have it all figured out. I fully know myself. I'm fully listening. But it is, it's like, it's just a reminder to give yourself like so much compassion and grace, because if you're like me, you've lived for so much of your life not trusting yourself that it's not like a light switch. You're not just gonna be able to turn it on. All of a sudden, you know who you are, you know what you want, you can listen to yourself. It's more like an oven where it's like, it's gonna heat up. Like, you know, you're gonna get here. And then as you start to trust yourself and listen to yourself again, whether it's a small thing, like I want pizza for dinner, or a big thing, like I'm gonna change careers, or I'm gonna move across the country. Like as you start listening to those, it's going to become more natural for you to listen to yourself. And it's really like, I know it can be scary again, when like no one else around you is really talking about that, or no one else is like breaking the status quo. But like you said, like what's going to bring you happiness and like flourishing, like that's worth it. Even if other people look at you weird or like, you know, reject you or whatever.
100%. And I think too, that I've learned as I go along in life is that we're constantly changing. We're in a changing society, and we change as beings. And, you know, so there, you're never going to be like that one specific person. You know, you're always going to be changing. The more we learn, the more we experience in life, the more we go through in life, I think changes us and changes who we are. And it's really just staying in it, kind of like, what's the right word? It's just being connected with yourself and recognizing those changes. And, you know, do I like this change? Do I want to fix it? Do I want to keep being that person, you know, and then just, you know, living life accordingly and being happy, like you said, living that, figuring out who you are and living, you know, the life that's going to be right for you.
Yeah, that's a great point, is that we are all changing. Again, something else that I'm like very much learning at this journey of trusting yourself. But yeah, I think it is important to realize that we are all going to change, and who you were a month ago, a year ago, 10 years ago is not who you are now. And for some, that can be scary. If like, no, I like who I am, I don't want to change. But I think when we start to realize that change is inevitable, it's really beautiful and opening. And I think that's where trusting yourself can really play a part in, because like at your core, again, it's like that inner self that like that's not going to change, like who you are at your core, even as titles change, even as your environment changes, even as like your personality changes, or you learn things, you grow, you make mistakes, but like at every single version of you, there is always that inner core self that is along. And so I think that's can help ground us when we realize that.
Yeah, oh, 100%. And I, like you said, I think that one of the biggest things is that people fear change, but like you said, it's inevitable. We are in a changing world, constantly changing. Everything around us is always changing. So no matter how much you fear it, it's something that no matter what, you will change, one way or another, mentally, physically, spiritually, you'll always be changing. And I think it's something that it's people just have to like kind of push through their fears. Did you push through your fears when you were going through so many different changes in your life?
Yeah, and I still am pushing through fears, but yeah, I think I mentioned a few times, but I think a big thing that I'm really having to push through my fear on is like my faith deconstruction, just changing. Because again, for 26 years of my life, I grew up and I was at church every week and I was reading and praying the Bible. I knew the Bible like the back of my hand, and I was like the ideal, what I would call a Christian. Faith is my, strong, like my strength and all of that. And so again, like now being like, oh, I'm uncertain, or I'm asking questions, or I'm doubting, or I'm like, hey, like that aspect doesn't work for me. Like this is what works for me now. But it's really scary because again, like when, especially when you've been something for so long, you're like, I don't know who I am. But to your point, if you take away the title of like Christian or like strong Christian, it's like, who am I? I don't know. And so I think I've had to push through the fear of change. And kind of like we were talking about before, like earlier, reframe it. Like the negative might be like, oh, I'm changing, this is horrible. But instead be like, well, how exciting. Like what new opportunities could be? Like what else can I discover about myself? Maybe I'll find new community. Maybe I'll find like something new about myself. And so, but I've definitely had to push through fear. And sometimes it's been like in an exciting, sometimes like I've been terrified. And but I think the key is like doing it anyway. And again, like the goal is to embrace this new version of myself and to learn to get down to my core and who I am. And yeah, and like I said, sometimes like you are just gonna be afraid and you have to push through, but I think it's worth it on the other side, when you come through the fear and you again discover something else about yourself or see, learn something new. I think it's worth it.
Oh yeah, I definitely do. And I think we shouldn't be intimidated by others who don't think alike us, even if it, sometimes when we have family members, it could be very intimidated also, because they're very opinionated. Family tends to, they tend to be a little bit more, not so scared to share their opinions, but it's not always, people don't always want to hear them, But it's really, not letting others, get to you, and not letting others, make you feel like, oh, I can't think like that or be like that, because it's not right, because, mom says so, or aunt so-and-so says so. It's really, being strong enough and sit in your own shoes to say, I am, this is who I am, and this is who I want to be.
Yeah, and I think that's an important thing. Like that's the beauty of becoming an adult. Like, yes, as a kid, you have to follow what your parents, think or something a little bit, but I think it's beautiful when you become an adult to realize like you are your own individual. Like regardless of your family, your friends, your job title, it's like you get to have your own opinions. You get to have your own beliefs. You get to think however you want to think. And I think that's really important, is being able to realize that in yourself. And then when you do get a family member or a friend or the church or something that is saying like, oh no, you have to think like this, you have to believe like this. Again, stopping and pausing, being like, actually, I don't, like I get to be my own unique individual person that takes a little bit from this and a little bit from that. And if you want to like completely follow, it's not so you have to disagree with any of those people. But again, it comes back to trying to know yourself and to realize that like no one has it right. Like there's a lot of people who can be like, no, my way's the right way, this is the right thing. But like there are people 200 and 2000 years ago that said the exact same thing, and like they changed and things changed from there. And so I think getting out of this mindset of right versus wrong will help us, A, be able to listen to ourselves and trust ourselves and figure things out. But then also like the mentality of like, it's not like, oh, they're right, I'm wrong, I'm right, they're wrong. It's not like that. It's like we're all on our own journeys to figure it out.
And I think it also will help people be more unified and more respectful towards one another. When we can look at other people and because they're different, no, you can't like look at them and say, oh, that they're wrong. What are they thinking? They're weird, blah, 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 blah. No. They just have a different way of doing things and that's good for them. So let's respect their,
Yes.
choices and their thoughts and their opinions, And I think once people start, not being so judgmental and we do try to, respect others, once that respect and not that judgmentalism, taking that away, I think people, can really start to really, feel more unified and more caring and more and have a more positive, environment that they live in.
Absolutely, I agree.
But so now, where can people find your book? So tell us a little about,
Yes. Yeah, you can find my book on Amazon, More Than Conquerors by Kristen Schott. You can also get it on my website, kristenschott.com. And there you can find a link to my podcast, my blogs, and my book.
Now, what's your podcast name?
It's called The Unbecoming Podcast.
Oh, I like that. Now, where can people find it?
So they can find it on Apple and Spotify right now. Or if you go to my Instagram, at Kristen Schott, I also have a link in there that links out to them as well.
Very cool. Now, do you have your own website?
I do. Yes, it's kristenschott.com. It has a little bit of stuff on there. It's kind of under works, but it has a link to my book, has some blogs, has a link to my podcast.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Now, if you had to like look at our conversation today and you really wanted to emphasize on some important factors, what are some of the things that you really like to, have the listeners understand?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think the biggest thing is even if you were listening and you didn't have an eating disorder, you've never had, mental health struggles or anything that I've dealt with, I think the big thing, which I didn't really mention, but was kind of threaded through there, is just don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't be afraid to get help. You're not alone in any of that. Like you're not too far gone or anything like that. So I think that, but then the biggest piece that I think I've had to learn is just that trusting yourself and like learning that nothing is too small to trust yourself in and realizing that it's a process. But I really just want to hit home for all the listeners that like you have a unique self. You have like an inner self that knows what's right, what's best, and truly like you can live an amazing life when you start listening to that. And so take your pauses, trust, like act on it when you hear it, but then just keep working towards just trusting yourself.
I love it. And I think you mentioned one thing that I really like to emphasize too is that don't be afraid to talk about your mental health disorder. It's there is a lot of stigmatism, but I think we've gotten better over the years and it's be, mental health disorders are talked about more now and it's not kept hush hush like it used to be. But there is still stigmatism out there, but I think people shouldn't feel threatened by that because many people suffer from some type of mental health disorder. People get panic attacks, they get anxiety, they, there's lots of different things. People have bipolar, depression, there's so many things out there, but that doesn't change who you are. We're all beautiful inside. And, and with the right help and the right therapy, people can overcome anything. And it's really, in order to get that right help, and you need to not be afraid to ask for it. And I think that's one thing people have to really understand is that if you don't feel that you're something's not right in your life, or people are telling you, that they see symptoms or they see things, and maybe you should want to get help. Listen and don't be afraid because you're no less of a person if you have a mental health disorder. You're just as wonderful as everybody else. We all have something in this life. Everybody has something. So we shouldn't stigmatize anybody or be judgmental towards other people because we all are beautiful inside
Perfectly said.
and out. Well, is there anything else you'd like to add to our conversation today?
No, I think that's good.
All righty. Well, this has been great having you on this show. I really enjoyed our conversation and I wish you the best of luck with your book and, and your podcast. And I'll be sure to listen to it and follow it as well. And thank you so much for coming on the show today and sharing your own life story and your own personal story and inspiring others because, you had a lot of great things to say today. And, I think everybody, should, have the, look inside themselves and, be able to trust themselves and do what makes them happy as a person. And I really thank you for coming on the show and sharing your message today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. You have a great day.
You too.